This is Chris Bleck on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Bleck and Abdallah podcast. It's presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
And I'm Abdallah here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. You can also watch us on Twitch. Search for our channel, ESPN 1000 Chicago. The chat is up. We are interacting with you throughout the show here on the chat. And here you on the phone lines, you can call us at 312-332-3776. A lot of news yesterday in the NFL, Abdallah. The Chicago Bears declined the fifth-year option on quarterback Mitchell Trubisky for the 2021 season. Sources tell Adam Schefter. So that's kind of how the news day started yesterday in the NFL. And then later, Andy Dalton agrees to terms with the Dallas Cowboys. He will be their backup this season. $3.5 million for Dalton to be the backup in Dallas. So we have one quarterback going to Dallas. We have Mitchell Trubisky knowing his future is uncertain with the Chicago Bears. He will be here this year, but the fifth-year option not picked up by the Chicago Bears.
It's not surprising given the decline that Mitchell Trubisky went from year one with Matt Nagy to year two, right? He hasn't lived up to being the second pick overall. You're not going to pay him $24.5 million if he gets hurt. You know, like the worst-case scenario for Trubisky and the Bears, they pick up the option, he gets hurt, and instead of cutting him because he hasn't played or he doesn't win the job over Nick Foles, and he gets hurt, and he can't, you know, you have to pay him the $24.5 million.
Yeah.
I mean, he declined significantly from 2018 to 2019. He went from 13th in touchdowns to 27th, 19th in passing yards to 21st, yards per pass thrown from 19th to 32nd, QB rating from 19th to 28th, and the garbage stat, but every Trubisky truther seems to want to throw in your face about 2018, is QBR from 3rd in QBR in 2018 to 28th in QBR in 2019. So it's a garbage stat in 2019, but it was the best stat ever in 2018.
Well, that's the world we live in, right? Facts are usually pushed to the side. And whatever takes place in the world and in society and in sports, you just find the stat that conveniently fits your point of view. It's a convenient way to go about your day is to ignore the full picture and to only look at a small sample size that supports your argument. So what was that QBR stat again? A stat that most people try to ignore when it comes to football?
QBR,
most people go with just straight quarterback rating.
QBR is the
stat that ESPN created with the help of Trent Dilfer because he thought the quarterbacks that were game managers were not getting enough credit for the game managing that they were doing.
Yes.
So give me the QBR stat again.
So QBR, he went from 3rd in 2018 to 28th in 2019.
It was a good stat 2 years ago.
Yes.
Bad stat this year. Now I like how that works.
There are
like
two quarterbacks that had the most significant drop in QBR from 2018 to 2019. Two quarterbacks in the league.
Okay, can I guess?
Significant drop from 2018 to 2019. Guess them.
Mitchie the Kid number one?
Mitchie the Kid, I believe. He's one or two. There are two. I don't know the order. There's one or two. He's one or two.
Okay. Let's see. Number two from 1 year to the next. Bad quarterback play. Trying to think of bad quarterback. Is it Bortles?
Is it Blake Bortles?
He didn't play enough. Is it Jared Goff?
It is not Jared Goff. It's a guy who maybe didn't play a lot either.
Did he get benched?
He got signed for a lot of money. Won a Super Bowl. Super Bowl winner.
A Super Bowl quarterback.
Super Bowl winner.
Hold on. It's not Patrick Mahomes.
Let's cross him off the list.
Who else has won Super Bowls as of late? Oh, so not Tom Brady?
Not Thomas Brady.
He won a Super Bowl.
Really? Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls as of late.
Contrary to popular belief, it is not Joe Flacco.
He's won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Here you go. He was injured, so I could see it. Possibly that team struggled. They missed the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I get it. Totally get it. Mm-hmm. Ben Roethlisberger.
Is not his beard and his extra keg he's carrying around lately. Mm. It is not Ben Roethlisberger. Mm.
He won.
Not fat shaming. We were all a little chunky during the quarantine.
He won a Super Bowl, and he had the second highest QBR drop. Won a Super Bowl. I'm trying to think of teams that have won Super Bowls.
Super Bowl.
Oh, okay. All right. Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers.
Not Aaron Rodgers. It is not, surprisingly enough, not Aaron Rodgers. Now, despite the fact that the Packers were like, you know what, we're drafting for the future, we're going to take Jordan Love in the first round, it is not Aaron Rodgers. It is not Aaron Rodgers. Keep guessing.
Let's see.
Keep guessing.
A team that has won a Super Bowl and this is really tough trying to figure it out. I'm actually trying to go through the Super Bowl winners as of late and see if I can figure this out. Denver, Peyton Manning's not playing.
No, he's not playing anymore.
Okay, all right. I got another team.
He's not playing anymore.
Another team. Surprising option, but if it's true, that's a hell of a stat you got there. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson.
It is not Russell Wilson.
Okay, not Russell Wilson.
It is not Russell Wilson. It is not.
Oh, I got it. It's this not makes Russell sense. Wilson.
Let's now, I will tell you this.
Let's go back to this. He's a quarterback that lost to the Patriots, right?
The two most deep ball accurate the throwers or something like that. Mitchell Trubisky does have a good stat with Russell Wilson, but this is not it.
Eli Manning.
It is not
he
Eli
had a
Manning.
Tough year, Super
tough
Bowl winner.
Year. Feel bad for that guy. Real inside. I mean, great guy inside the meeting room. I'm surprised the Bears didn't try to bring him in, but no. Not Eli Manning.
My other option here, it can't be because this guy's good. He had a really good year last year. I find it hard to believe that Drew Brees.
It is not.
The Saints won
Drew
a Super Bowl.
Brees. Oh, wow. It is not Drew Brees. One would think.
Giants, Steelers, Saints, Packers, Giants, Ravens, Seahawks, Patriots, Broncos.
You're missing a team in there.
Chiefs.
You missed. Nope. There's a team you missed.
I've kind of gone through all of the options.
No, there's one team you didn't say.
So give me the stat again. What is that? Maybe I'm not hearing the stat.
There are two quarterbacks that had the significant, mostly, no. Mm. Trubisky went from third in QBR to 28th. Probably the most significant drop in QBR.
Okay.
There are two quarterbacks in the league.
In the league. And so
one of them's won a Super Bowl.
And it's the biggest drop.
Yeah. He's a big guy.
And so Trubisky's one.
Trubisky's one of them.
We're talking about, for those who are just joining us, we're talking about Mitchell Trubisky's fifth-year option, not picked up by the Chicago Bears. That's why we're talking about this. Abdallah has this fantastic stat.
Awesome stat.
And I can't get the second quarterback.
Big guy. He's a big guy.
He's tall.
He's a big guy.
He's a tall.
I don't know if he's
a tall quarterback.
I don't know if he's tall.
He's a big quarterback.
In some sense.
I mean, Kurt Warner's not playing anymore, it's not Kurt Warner.
Not Kurt Warner in his high and tight.
Wow. It's not Kurt Warner.
I'm
trying to look through these teams.
You named all the Super Bowl winners. I don't think you named one of them.
Really? Am I missing somebody?
I think you named one of them. Go through those Super Bowl winners again. Start with last year. Who won the Super Bowl last year, Chris?
The Chiefs.
It was not Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
How about the year before that?
The Patriots.
It was not Tom Brady.
Then we get to the Patriots again.
It was not Tom Brady again.
Broncos, Patriots, Seahawks, Ravens, Giants, Packers,
You're missing
Steelers,
a team. Are you purposely skipping a team? There's a team that won a Super Bowl a couple years ago.
Oh, no. Are you being serious? You're telling me the whole point of your stat is that the other guy is now the guy that we have?
It's Nick Foles.
Oh, no. All right. Well, there you have it, Bears fans. 312-332-3776.
The point of this
the stat is the other guy who has the biggest drop in QBR
is
Nick Foles, who is now the Bears quarterback. Yeah. Fantastic.
Look, you can go through and nitpick stats if you want to. I can give you that Trubisky was 23rd most accurate versus the Blitz out of 29 qualifying quarterback.
Pretty good.
I can also tell you, you can pare this down. We often do this with ratings, right? Like to pull the curtain back. We often do this with some form of ratings. Like if you want to be number one in something, you can say you're number one with women who drive cars on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays between the hours of 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. and they watched your show, right? Like you can do that for rate. Like you can parse it down to whatever you want to. So I can go through and tell you that courtesy of QB DataMine that on 3rd and 5 plus last season, Trubisky Trubisky was 61.5% accurate throwing on first down, the fifth most accurate. So on third down, with 5 yards to go, he's the fifth most accurate quarterback in the NFL. So yeah, I can parse it down to whatever and find and nitpick stats if I want to. He's also one of the better quarterbacks throwing outside the numbers, 10-plus yards downfield. Okay.
It's good.
Great. But ultimately, if you look at the stats that matter, touchdowns, passing yards, yards per pass thrown, quarterback rating, not QBR, quarterback rating, last year, 27th, 21st, 32nd, and 28th. Not good. You're not going to pick up the option. Of course you're not.
Well, yeah, I know. I agree with you. And, listen, the stats could work to your favor if you want to do that. I guess my question is... For the Trubisky truthers out there, like, are we done with this now? Do we have to do this anymore? Like, as a football community here in Chicago, watching the Chicago Bears, mm-hmm. Do we need the guy at the stadium calling radio shows on social media? Do we need the guy to give you the bogus stats about why Trubisky's great?
Well, you know what's going to happen, right?
The Trubisky truthers.
You and I...
You're all done, right? It's over now,
look,
right?
You have season tickets.
Trubisky truthers are done. There's no more Trubisky truthing anymore, right?
You have season tickets.
We can be done with it. It's
and
over.
You lost. You go to every home game.
It's over.
I'm fortunate enough to go to a handful of games with you every single year. And we always have the guys behind us, not directly behind us, maybe a few rows behind us, that are always yelling to put in insert backup name here. Put in Haney. Put in whoever. Put in this guy. Put in Chase Daniels. And there's only one of him. It's Daniel. It's one guy. You know that the second Foles wins the job and has a one bad game, you're going to get we got this Trubisky kid. You're paying him. Why don't you put him in there? Well, see what he's got left.
You know what's interesting about that take is I remember last season, those guys who sit behind us, those guys were not on Trubisky's side.
No, not anymore.
Those guys were totally out.
They put in the Daniels kid. See what he's got.
Totally out.
Well, he can't be worse.
But you and I are the show that started this. We are the ones that started it. We coined it.
Trubisky truth.
We started it.
Yeah.
People have used it on TV.
That's fine.
I've seen it on SportsCenter.
I got no problem.
It's all over the place.
Make shirts. I don't care.
Trubisky truthers. You heard it here first. But, your act's over, right? It's done. There is no more act anymore.
The truth is out there, Chris. And the truth that there are two quarterbacks that had the biggest drop in QBR last season. And it is Trubisky and it is Foles. And they are both Bears quarterbacks. That's the truth. The truth is out there that he went from 3rd in QBR to 28th in QBR, 13th in touchdowns to 27th in touchdowns, 19th in passing yards to 21st in passing yards, 19th in passing yards per completion to 32nd, 19th in quarterback rating to 28th in quarterback. That's the truth that's out there.
That was good. I should have hit the sounder to go to break off of that because that was solid.
I appreciate that.
That was really good.
That's okay.
Here's the tease for coming up next.
We'll get it next time.
We're going to talk about the flu game with Michael Jordan. Our Bulls backstory. That's next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. It's Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Tonight on ESPN Television, episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance will premiere. Our coverage here on ESPN 1000 of The Last Dance is presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill. Throughout The Last Dance month of this airing on ESPN Television, Abdallah, here on Black and Abdallah, we have taken the time each show that we host to have a segment called Bulls Backstory. We take a deeper look into a highlight, a storyline, something that took place throughout the Jordan era as we're kind of watching along with The Last Dance. Today, we take a look on Bulls Backstory at the flu game. It was 1997, the series in the NBA Finals, the Bulls and the Utah Jazz. The series tied at two games apiece. Heading into Game 5, the flu game, Michael Jordan giving one of his all-time great performances in the NBA.
Yeah, and if you look at that, obviously, you know, the backstory is the night before he was feeling sick, he calls Tim Grover into his hotel room, tells him he doesn't feel well, whether it's the flu, whether it's food poisoning from some bad pizza. Either way, he needs fluids, he needs all this treatment, he needs all this stuff. He feels like absolute crap. He goes out, scores 39 points. They win the game, obviously, on he did hit the, not the last shot, but he hit a three at the end of the game. If you break down the box score, Chris, he only had 2 points in the third quarter and 15 points in the fourth quarter. 15 points in the fourth quarter after playing all of that game, dehydrated, aching, body aches. You've had the flu before. You've been hungover. You know what it's like to play and to be a little under the weather and still have to perform. And he did it. And he hit one of the game-winning shots. He had, you know, Luke Longley had the dunk at the end, obviously, to put them up. But it was still, you know, his three-pointer that put them over the hump. And it's my favorite. It's one of my favorite Jordan moments because I've had to work hungover before. It sucks.
It's the most relatable Jordan's ever been.
It's the most relatable Jordan's been ever been to me. Like you and I have been producing here for a long time. I think I got to do something with Randy Merkin this week. He's like, you've been here for 13 years. I was like, I've been here for 13 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And
it's been a minute.
And Tyler producing the show today. Tyler, you're 23. When I was your age, I'd have to have an intern wake me up to produce the show because I was so hungover sometimes.
Like, let's not make this about you. Let's keep it on Jordan.
But I'm trying to say that this is why it's relatable.
Yes.
Like, because I've done this. And it is, I've not, you know, played an NBA Finals
listen,
game.
Listen, you didn't do this.
I didn't do this. But ultimately, like, whether it's hungover or sick or the flu, like, this is, to me, his one of his best feats.
Yeah, you could argue that this is, like, if you want to say this is his masterpiece, you could say that this and then probably the last game in 98 against the Jazz, those are the two masterpieces to Jordan's career. And to your point, in the box score, in the second quarter, he had 17 points. In the fourth quarter, he had 15 points. He ends the game with 38. He had 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals. He played 44 minutes with the flu. So this is the setup. Heading into Game 5, we go to the NBA on NBC broadcast to Marv Albert. Here, after the music has played, here's Albert setting the scene courtside with Matt Gukas and Bill Walton, Gukas, and Marv Albert all on the court heading into Game 5 of the 1997 NBA Finals.
Now, the big story here tonight, the story concerning Michael Jordan's physical conditions. This Jordan arriving about 2 hours ago. He is suffering from flu-like symptoms. Made his way onto the court just moments ago, and as you see right here, looking a bit shaky. He was up all last night, spent all day in bed, did not eat at all, did not go to the shoot-around earlier today, did not practice, so his status is uncertain. Ahmad Rashad and Jim Gray will have more on this as the game progresses. Matt, this on top of the Bulls, coming off the extremely disappointing loss the other night. A game they led by 5 with about 2.5 minutes to go, coming off that kind of defeat. What is Chicago's approach tonight?
Well, Chicago can't worry about the missed opportunity to win Game 4, but they can learn from it, especially ways to get Michael Jordan better shots if he can be effective. The Bulls need more of Michael in the post, even if he has to back it in. He can get his own shot against anybody or find one for a teammate. More of this. Set that pick for Jordan. It creates driving space. Utah has trouble defending pick and roll just like everybody else. And get him on the move where he has a chance to get fouled. No free throw attempts in Game 4 for Jordan. And all the Bulls are taking and missing too many jump shots. Not enough offensive rebounding. Just under 10 a game as Dennis Rodman continues to flounder. Now for Chicago to pull off a win here tonight in Utah. Not only does Michael Jordan have to be special while he's not feeling very well, but the rest of the Bulls will have to elevate their game as well.
As for the Utah Jazz, who have been on fire the last two games, they've certainly turned things around. Bill, you look back over the course of the illustrious career of John Stockton, there have been many magnificent games, but Sunday night here in Game 4 was a defining moment for John Stockton.
Marv, it all crystallized for John as he emphatically reminded us that more than anything else, it's a mental game. But John Stockton has not been alone as the entire Jazz team has responded since their return here to Utah. Now, the offense has found itself. They're getting to the line and making them. They're passing the ball. They're pounding the glass. But in the end, for Utah, their championship dream always comes down to Karl Malone. After a very passive start, he's returned to the physical game. He needs to realize just how much better he is than every single member of this full front line. And when they get in his way, hey, knock him down, and if necessary, step on their face. Now, while everybody else has been throwing the petals, the rose petals at the feet of Michael Jordan, the view from here is, this is Karl Malone's night. He has to show the world just how great a player he is. Marv, the Jazz, they have to win tonight if their dream is going to come true.
Okay, so I had Tyler keep in the clip with Bill Walton there and breaking down the Jazz because if you go back to the time, remember, Karl Malone won the MVP in 97, Jordan won it in 98, Malone wins it again in 99. In the 97 finals, there was this conversation that Karl Malone was the best player in the world. And so you hear it there in the game setup. This is the opportunity for Karl Malone to prove that he is the best player in the world. Step on their face. Whatever Bill Walton said there, right? This is his opportunity. He goes out and scores 19 points, 7 of 17 from the field in 33 minutes, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, and the Jazz lose. So, like, the setup going into the game, right? Jordan's health. And then also, it is now time for Karl Malone to take the mantle as the best player in the world, which he never does, mm-hmm. right? Like, that never takes place. Well, but people were really rooting for Karl Malone to take over what Jordan was doing.
The Jazz also hadn't lost at home in that playoff, those playoffs yet. So this was a huge game for them. Obviously, the Bulls go up 3-2 at the end of this game. And if the Jazz go up 3-2, who knows what happens at the end? You know, only having to win one more game, they could have ultimately won the series after this one. Obviously, that's fact. They could have won. But, you know, it was such a pivotal game in the series because of how good the Jazz had been at home leading up to this.
So we go to Ahmad Rashad, standing courtside right before tip. Here's his report on Jordan's health before the game. Game 5 of the 97 finals takes place.
After more on these two clubs, let's check in with the Dean, Ahmad Rashad.
All right, thanks, Marv. At 3:30 this morning, Michael Jordan woke up with flu-like symptoms. He had a stomach ache and a headache, and he couldn't go back to sleep. He threw up all night, and as reported earlier, he missed the shoot-around, but he was in bed all day and continued to throw up. As a matter of fact, he got in here early. When I went to talk to him back in the back room, he was in a dark room trying to get some rest, but still throwing up. And, Marv, I talked to him. I said, how do you feel? He said, I really feel horrible. But his history in games where he's either been hurt or sick has been bad news for the opponent. And as you can see, he's ready to go tonight. Marv?
All right, thanks.
So, okay, the reason I had that kept in there, right, the clip of Ahmad Rashad, he tells you exactly how sick Jordan was, and then he reminds people right before tip, you know, when Jordan's been sick before or injured before, he usually gives his best performances. So the scene was set, and the Bulls and the Jazz play a tight game going into the fourth quarter. That's where we find at the end of the game. Abdallah mentioned it earlier. Jordan hits a big three-point shot, but that comes after he misses a free throw and gets his own offensive rebound, keeps the possession for the Chicago Bulls. Take a listen to this.
46 and 5/10 seconds remaining in this fourth quarter. Free throw shooter during the season. And the game is tied at 85.
Marv, the Bulls have been here so many times. The huge games, year after year. The confidence, the poise, the determination, the discipline and organization down the stretch, all paying off right now with Jordan masterfully at the line.
For the possession with 40 seconds remaining. The game tied at 85.
such a great line.
Ostertag puts it to one.
You got a foul right now. You got a foul. Karl Malone, what are you doing?
We're down to 10 seconds.
You got a foul.
As they open the floor. Chicago lead with 6 2/10 seconds to go in the fourth quarter.
That's hard to believe that you could lose track of time and score as Karl Malone did there right next to Pippen. He does have 5 fouls. No excuse. Should have committed one there.
Michael Jordan playing on heart and spirit. The missed free throw here. Everybody's standing there. And then the furthest guy from the ball, Michael Jordan, comes up with it. And then he backs it out. They post up Scotty. And then for no reason, they double team Scotty down low and leaving Michael Jordan. He knocks down this three, gives him the huge lead. And then the total exhaustion on the bench. Michael Jordan sucking air, got the back massage from Scottie Pippen. I think Chicago just fouls right here, makes it a free throw game the rest of the way.
Okay, so the Bulls go on to win 90-88, and of course, Marv Albert nails the line after Jordan hits that three-point shot to kind of put them ahead to take control of the game like a boxer up against the ropes. And that's what Jordan looked like, and obviously the famous shot of Michael in Scottie's arms walking to the bench is what Bill Walton was talking about there as they headed into the commercial break. And the Bulls go on to win that game. After the game, Jordan and Pippen postgame on the court.
0.2 seconds remaining. The inbounds and the Chicago Bulls have defeated the Utah Jazz to take a 3-2 lead. They win it 90-88. A courageous, classic performance by the flu-ridden Michael Jordan. A performance that I think will go down as one of the greatest of his career because of the situation. Let's go to Ahmad Rashad. Ahmad?
Michael, one of the great performances, the way you were feeling. You played 44 minutes. It was all about will.
Yeah, you know, it's all about desire. You just got to come out here and do what you got to do. You wanted it real bad, you know, and me as a leader, I had to come out and do my best, and hopefully the team could rally around me and come out and make contributions.
Never any doubt down the stretch. How weak were you?
I was really tired. I was very weak at halftime. I told Phil that used me in, you know, spurts. But, I mean, somehow I found the energy. Just stay strong. I wanted it really bad.
All right. Congratulations on a great game, Michael. Get some rest.
Thanks.
And we'll see you on Friday. Let's go over to Jim Gray.
All right, thank you very much, Ahmad. Scotty, what can you say about your teammate, Michael Jordan? You've seen this guy do everything. Have you ever seen him play under these kind of conditions and this illness?
No, I haven't. You know, it was a hell of an effort for him, you know, just to be able to come out and play in this game. And the effort that he gave us today was unbelievable. You know, as his teammates, you know, we should have stepped up and played much better basketball. But we really appreciate the way that he steps up and shows his leadership to our ball club.
What did he say to you guys? It looked as though at one point on the bench, like he nearly was exhausted and couldn't continue.
Well, he pretty much was. You know, he felt like he was going to faint. I guess he was pretty dehydrated and just tired. But, you know, he gutted it out. And, you know, we owe this win to him, man. He did everything that he could to carry us.
So that's Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan after the game on NBC, the NBA and NBC. How about Jordan? Use me sparingly. Use me in spurts. He played 44 minutes.
I know. So throughout the Last Dance, Jordan has not been shy about just saying stuff.
Yeah.
So like tonight, you know, they focus on the Jordan rules, not the Pistons Jordan rules, the book that Sam Smith wrote.
Right.
And there's a point, if you saw the preview for it leading into tonight, there's a point where they ask about sources and he goes, it was horse. Like, he doesn't care about saying things. I hope that when they get to this game, because I don't think they do in these next two episodes. I think it's coming up. But if he just looks at the camera and goes, that's hungover. Think about it. It's the flu game, right?
Right.
Did anybody else on the team get sick? Else on the team miss any games with the
also,
flu?
Also, does the flu just hit you for
disappear
like 24 hours?
And, yeah.
I don't know.
Food poisoning, I can understand. I get food poisoning. Like, it's the one thing you can, like, call off work from, and people are like, yeah, okay, 24 hours, I get it.
And there's also...
he was throwing up and, like, all that kind of stuff.
There's articles that have been published since then that suggest, and there's people who were there, his agent, other people that were there, saying that it was food poisoning because of the people who brought the pizza to the room service. The room service that brought it to the door, it was four guys who were all kind of laughing to each other.
Yeah.
And the people in the room, what Jordan thought it was weird, yet Jordan's the only one that ate the pizza that night.
But what do so you he's do the only one that got food sick. To make it?
Listen, man, I don't want to know. Listen, there's a lot of sick people out there who mess with food. I don't want to know.
When you get food poisoning, it's like something from something undercooked or something like that. Yeah. But like, what would you do? I don't want to know. That's why it would be awesome if he was just like, I was hungover.
So Jordan scores 38 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, 1 block, 44 minutes. He went 13 of 27 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3. He got to the line 12 times. He made 10. The flu game, the Bulls win the game 90-88. They go on to win the NBA Finals in Game 6 at home to win the 97 championship, and that was Steve Kerr hitting the game winner there. So that's our Bulls backstory for today and all of our Bulls coverage of The Last Dance and Last Dance Mondays right here on ESPN 1000s presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
If you're not on Twitch, the chat room right now is very, very funny. Twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago.
Can you read me some of the comments when we come back?
I mean, I don't know. People are speculating as to what you could have done to the food and that kind of stuff.
Come on.
But
let's
like,
keep it clear.
I'll tell you in the break.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. You can also watch the show on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago. Abdallah, did you see this the other day? The college football playoff projections for next season are out. They are suggesting the team to reach the playoffs, a percentile to reach the playoffs, the top four teams, Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, Wisconsin. So if you're a Big Ten fan, Ohio State and Wisconsin both right now being suggested to have the best percentage to reach the college football playoff next season. Wisconsin at 33%, Ohio State at 64%, Bama at 59%, Clemson at 81%. They also have the percentage to win the national championship. Clemson at 36% leads the way. After Wisconsin, you get Georgia, LSU, Penn State, Oregon, Oklahoma, Texas, Auburn, and UCF. So if we take a look at the top of the board, obviously, Clemson, Bama, always there. Ohio State, always there. Good to see Wisconsin jumping up, and they're going to be a very good team this upcoming football season if we get football season.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what matters.
Let's say we'll get
one in the spring, but ultimately we're talking football here. So so you've got Clemson. Clemson's got the easiest schedule always an easy schedule.
The ACC is not as good as the SEC or the Big Ten, so that's why.
Yeah, I believe they play, who do they? They have someone big on their schedule early this season. But anyway, Clemson is going to be there. They've got arguably the best player in college football in Trevor Lawrence. A bunch of guys still decided to come back and play with them. You know, Dabo Swinney always sets his team up for success. They're going to be there. And then you've got Alabama. What they're going to do, a quarterback, who knows? Still, they could have another quarterback, another two quarterback challenge thing where they, you know, what am I trying to say here?
I can't help you out if I don't know what you're trying to say. Competition was the word I'm looking for.
I thought you were looking for competition for a second. So they have a quarterback. They'll probably have a quarterback competition, but
that was fantastic. To answer your question about Clemson, they basically have a easy schedule except for they go to Florida State October the 10th. Florida State, not as good as they've been in the past.
They play Notre Dame.
That's not until November the 7th.
Yeah.
That game is in South Bend.
Yes.
That's going to be a tough game for Clemson. Outside of that, they should have a pretty easy schedule. So the kind of point that I'm just getting to here is that the projections suggesting the Big Ten is going to have a pretty good year in college football. Okay. So this is where I wanted to ask you this question, because if we see different schools from around the country, I was just reading a story from the Oregon president for Oregon University, and he is suggesting that his school, the Oregon Ducks will be playing football in the fall. He doesn't know if there will be fans there, but they will be playing football. We've seen the Iowa president suggest the same thing. Texas A&M on Thursday said that they will probably be playing football in
Alabama
the fall.
Alabama said that they're going to be open. So
okay, so all these different schools and different pockets are all suggesting that they will be playing football in the fall. Let me ask you this question. Because college football, and the reason I bring up the college football playoff and all this stuff, the reason we have the debates is really there is no commissioner to college football. It is an entity built up of separate entities to form one, right? The different conferences are ruled by their conference president, right? Their conference commissioner. Is it possible that we could get to a point in the fall where, say, a part of the country is dealing less with COVID-19 than other parts of the country? The curve has been flattened in those areas, and those schools are planning on reopening. Is it possible that we could get to a point in the fall where the conferences start to make decisions for themselves, and they don't care what the rest of college football is going to do, and they just say, you know what, here's what we have. In the Pac-12, we have our teams. We're all good. We're ready to go. We're going to play our conference schedule. We're going to give you college football, and we're gonna go about our business. What if the SEC says, you know what? Based on our numbers, based on our projections, our teams are safe. We are going to go out there. We're going to play SEC football on Saturdays because it's what we do, right? Is it possible that we get to a point in the fall where the different commissioners of the different conferences make their own decisions, and it's not just a unilateral decision throughout college football where everyone plays, where it is the Big Ten making that decision for themselves, knowing that they have good football teams this season? Penn State, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Michigan, those teams are all going to be really good. If they can make sure their players are safe, does the Big Ten make their own decision and not worry about the other conferences?
I don't think so.
Really? You think that everyone will just stay on the same page?
I think there's too much money involved to not. Because if you think, like, we just talked about Clemson playing Notre Dame, right? Alabama opens with USC. You know, you can't.
But there's so much
money.
In this situation, you would then cancel out the cross conference games if that's what we still have.
So we have a six game schedule.
No, I mean, listen, all the conferences decide a conference champion based on their conference schedule.
I know.
What Alabama does against USC has nothing
matter.
To do with the SEC championship.
I understand that. I understand
that. So, like,
that.
Those games, yes, lost revenue, but if it's some games or no games at all, I could see conferences like the Big 12 saying, you know what? Here in the heartland, it's not as big of a deal as everyone else in the country is making it seem, even though it is a big deal. And we're going to play our conference schedule, and we're going to have a conference champion of the Big 12 just so we can have the revenue. I think that is certainly a possibility, because everything is a possibility at this point.
I think it's possible. I don't think it's likely. I think that there'll still be a, you know, we're not going to be the conference that, you know, that kind of... Because you always, look, you can't have every single school is not like, because look, the Big Ten can't ultimately have every team on the same page because not every team is in the Midwest. What are you going to do about Rutgers?
No,
like,
I know.
Rutgers is out east. They're not in the Midwest.
I totally get that. And that's something that the Big Ten will have to figure out. The Pac-12, on the other hand, many
of
those states.
The Pac-12 could do it. The SEC could do it.
Like, many of those states are in situations where not only are the numbers coming down, but the numbers are looking good.
The ACC doesn't have to do it. They can just make Clemson the champion. Like, that's just easy.
Because that's just what they do.
Because that's just what they do.
Hand them a plate of cupcakes.
Look,
and
it's
say
not Clemson's fault that the ACC sucks. You know, Dabo doesn't have to recruit for Louisville.
You know, the tough spot is that, like, Notre Dame is an independent.
Yes.
So they wouldn't have. They would have to negotiate with all the separate entities to kind of piece together their conference. Black and Abdallah will take your calls at 312-332-3776. Talking football with you.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago.
Dubner and Xander coming up 10 to noon right here on ESPN 1000. Bleck and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. Thank you to Tyler Aki for producing today's show. If you missed our Bulls backstory for today, the flu game in 1997, Game 5, Chicago Bulls win it. Jordan with the flu. He was awesome. You can download our podcast, Bleck and Abdallah, on the ESPN Chicago app. Download, rate, subscribe to the podcast. Find all of our Bulls backstories. We are doing one per show throughout the month that the Last Dance is taking place. The Last Dance is tonight. We're talking a little college football, Abdallah, because we're kind of looking at the fall, and there are different schools around the country not only suggesting that students will be on campus, but now that their football teams will be playing football in the fall. And I'm just wondering how that will work if all of college football decides that they are not ready to play, whether or not you will get different conferences making the decision for themselves while others are still staying at home and trying to get through COVID-19 and the pandemic.
Look, you need the money, right? Like half these schools, like not half, all of these schools that play college football, the number one sport, the number one money-generating sport is football. Like even Duke, you know, like their football program still generates a ton of money. You know, like even the smaller schools still generate a ton of money. These little schools that get beat up on by Alabama and Clemson and Auburn and LSU and all these, when you go play these east-west directional schools, they get paid to take their beatings. They need that money from the beatings to fund other schools. You know, if you look at LSU, I've looked at LSU's and I've looked at Alabama's revenue. They bring in, like, Alabama brings in, like, $35 million profit from their football program. The next one, their basketball program, brings in, like, $12 million. Then their baseball and softball programs bring in, like, $5 million. The rest of them are at a loss. They take money from the other sports to be able to happen. So if you don't have that money, and a lot of it is still, part of it is the attendance. Because it's not like Soldier. There's 102,000 people in Alabama that go to games. Like, it holds 102,000 people. You and I have been there.
Yeah, but
it's not cheap. It's 30% of the revenue.
It has been a story the last couple of off seasons how college football can get more people into the building because they've seen the numbers start to drop. So it is a problem. But I mean, listen,
I get that. But the tickets are still sold.
It's all about TV revenue. That's what this is all about. Bleck and Abdallah with you here on ESPN 1000. John Rolling Meadows, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. I mean, I think two-thirds of the schools you mentioned depend on football for their revenue, basically. But, you know, there are teams in the Big Ten like Michigan. Wisconsin's becoming a two-sport school now with basketball picking up the slack a little bit. You got teams that depend, I don't know as much on football because there are some teams, some schools that are a two-sport team that do well. But, yeah, I mean, football is the national pastime, I think. I'm calling to tell you I was born in Madison. My dad went to Wisconsin, so that's my hometown team. And I love to hear you guys talk about the Badgers being in that Final Four. But you know what? I look at this realistically, their defense is stellar. I mean, they will shut you down. They'll keep the games close, but their offense is too safe. They've got to open up the door a little bit, and maybe they have a quarterback that can put the ball in the air more, and they feel safe with the downfield passes so that they can keep up with teams like Michigan and Ohio State, because that's what keeps Wisconsin out of that Final Four. Is Ohio State, Michigan, Minnesota's picking it up. They're doing better. You know, so, I mean, the Big Ten is so tight that if you're going to be in that Final Four, you've got to take more chances with that football and get that ball in the end zone more. And Wisconsin needs to pick it up.
Yeah, absolutely, John. I appreciate the phone call. And to John's point, you know, passing yards per game last year, they were 96th in the country.
Yeah, to John's point, too, about the basketball versus football, Michigan State's football team brought in $40 million in profit. Like, after their expenses, right. $40 million. Their basketball team, $10
million. Right, so, even like, though their basketball team is way more... they achieve more. They're more famous.
Absolutely. They've been to more Final Fours, all that good stuff. I get that. It's college football, man. Yeah. Like, there's nothing like it.
You know, it's interesting looking at Wisconsin's schedule this upcoming season. They've got a tough schedule, even though
they got a tough schedule, and their best offensive player went to the draft.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only their tough schedule, they have a back-to-back. Listen to this 3-week span for Wisconsin at the end of September into October. September 26 at Michigan. October 3, they have Notre Dame at home, Camp Randall. Then the following weekend at home against Minnesota. And to John's point, like, Minnesota's coming. If you're a Big Ten fan and you doubted P.J. Fleck, like, that team, not only did they have a good year last year.
Good recruiting class.
But did you see released this week the 2021 football recruiting class on ESPN.com?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the top 10, there are two schools that jump out at you in the top 10 that make you say, hold up, really? Here's the top 10. Number one, so this is 2021 football recruiting classes. So next year's recruiting class. Early recruits. Ohio State's number one. Number two, North Carolina. You think Mack Brown's doing work? Number two right now. Number three, Florida. Four, Clemson. Five, Tennessee. Six, Minnesota.
Yeah, that's okay.
Six is Minnesota.
All right.
Then we get to Miami, Iowa, Notre Dame, Georgia.
Talk to me after signing.
No, no. I understand. It's early. Early recruits who are committed. But to see Minnesota at six and North Carolina at two with Mack Brown, Mack Brown and P.J. Fleck are doing work. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
They're accomplishing a lot. So, you know, to the whole point is Wisconsin's going to have a tough go, and that's a tough stretch. Michigan, Notre Dame, Minnesota coming up in the fall. If we get football.
We'll get in the spring.
Well, I mean, at some point they're going to play.
They're going to play football.
At some point we'll have football.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Is that something that's safe to say?
In the spring.
I mean, in 2 weeks we get NASCAR.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're fired up about that.
Buggity, 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 let's go racing.
Fred Xander next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.